Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 2nd. Unusual pools forming in region. Majority of these salt flats are also on private property. The story was written by Katie Friel of the Houston Chronicle. Recent rains in the Guadalupe Mountains have made for a most unusual sight, Caribbean-esque pools as far as the eye can see. These pools are actually salt flats, a 2-million-year-old expanse located east of El Paso and near the small, appropriately named town of Salt Flat, Texas. Though the salt flats are usually dry, this year's rainy summer has created a kind of magical oasis. According to KTSM9 News, based in El Paso, the knee-high water has people flocking to the banks of these pools to swim or simply take in the majestic scene. Unfortunately, the majority of these salt flats are also on private property, which is causing headaches for the local sheriff's office. In a Facebook post shared on August 30th, the Hudspeth County Sheriff's Office issued a warning to would-be visitors to stay away. According to reporting by the Chronicle, El Pasoans in the 1700s would make the 100-mile trek to the flats to procure salt. It remained communal property open to all until the 1870s, when two El Paso businessmen tried to acquire land rights to the flats and instead ignited a 4-day gun battle. Today, the salt flats are mainly spread across privately owned ranches. While a visit today to see the natural wonder probably won't end in gunfire, although in Texas it's possible, the sheriff's office says it is issuing citations to anyone caught trespassing on private land. We reached out to both the National Park Service and the Hudspeth County Sheriff's Office for comment, but did not immediately receive a response. National Weather Service says summer weather was historically cool. The National Weather Service reported the August average fell below 80 degrees for the first time since 2008. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The National Weather Service is reporting that summer 2021 will go down as one of the coolest summers going back to 1993. The National Weather Service has reported on its website that the average temperature of the summer months, June, July, and August, reached 80.3 degrees. To put that temperature in perspective, here are some NWS Midland figures about the summer heat. The average this summer was the second lowest going back to 1993, trailing only the average during the summer of 2007, 78.7 degrees. The average summer temperature from 1981 to 2010 was 81.2 degrees. The average summer temperature from 2011 to 2020 was 84.2 degrees. The National Weather Service reported that the August average, 79.8 degrees, marked the first time that the average in August fell below 80 degrees since 2008 and was more than 3 degrees below the typical average for the month of August, 83.2 degrees. While the temperature was lower during the summer, the amount of precipitation was up. The National Weather Service reported 8.07 inches from June through August. That ranked as the fourth most going back to 1996 and more than 3 inches greater than the summer average, 5.03 inches. Summer weather since 1996. Coolest averages, 2007, 78.7 degrees, 2021, 80.3 degrees, 1997, 80.8 degrees. Average of last 10 years, 84.2 degrees. Summer precipitation, most rainfall. 2009, 8.9 inches. 2006, 8.4 inches. 2007, 8.1 inches. 2021, 8.07 inches. Average, 5.03 inches. City and MISD say COVID-19 cases on the rise. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Recent numbers from the Midland Health Department show a slight increase in COVID cases to begin last week. The Health Department reported 851 new cases on August 22nd through 25th. Those preliminary figures are slightly above the 843 cases from August 15th through 18th. That means last week is on pace to equal or even beat the number of cases from August 15th through 21, 1,265 cases, which was a new high for 2021, and the most new cases in a week inside Midland County since November. Midland ISD reported the number of total COVID cases since the school year began on August 2nd has jumped from 1,192 on Monday to 1,293 on Wednesday. That includes students and staff, according to the district. Midland ISD also reported 413 active cases on its website on Wednesday. Midland Health did not have an update on its website Wednesday. Hospital officials have been consistent in saying that more new cases at the levels experienced during the past few weeks likely will mean elevated numbers of COVID patients. On Tuesday, that number was 124, which was more than half of the total census at Midland Memorial, 234. DPS seeks tips in murder. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The Texas Department of Public Safety is asking for the public's help in solving the murder of 82-year-old Jose Jasso of Pecos. Last week, DPS released their third episode of Cold Case Investigations of the Texas Rangers, which highlighted Jasso's murder. The YouTube show was inspired by the success of the series like Unsolved Mysteries and other true crime shows in bringing attention to cold cases and unearthing new details. On March 23, 2010, the DPS responded to Jasso's ranch in Pecos after his remains were discovered that day, Texas Ranger Philip Reading said in the episode. Evidence at the scene pointed to an altercation between Jasso and another individual, and foul play was suspected in his death. Jasso's home on the ranch was burned down, and his 2000 Chevrolet truck was missing when officers arrived. 2 days later, his truck was found abandoned at a business in Odessa. A witness who knew Jasso told investigators he saw a woman driving Jasso's truck before his remains were discovered. He provided a composite sketch of a woman wearing sunglasses with her hair in a ponytail. Quote, "Someone in Pecos knows what happened to Mr. Jasso," Breeding said in the episode. 11 years later, we're still not any closer to solving it than we were back then. We need you to come forward and help us give this family some closure," end quote. Jasso's son, Jose Luis Jasso, described his father as strong-bodied and kind and someone who went to church every Sunday and Wednesday. Quote, "If anybody knows anything, I want to know," Jose Luis Jasso said. "I want to know who killed my father," end quote. There have been suspects identified in the case, but no one has been charged with any crimes, according to information about the investigation on the DPS website. Jasso was, quote, "a personable man with a large family and had no known enemies," end quote. Texas Crime Stoppers is offering a $3,000 reward to anyone who comes forward with information that leads to the arrest of the person responsible. A new episode of Cold Case Investigations about unsolved cases in Midland, Odessa, and the surrounding region will premiere each month. Anyone with information on Hassel's murder is asked to contact the Texas Rangers at 1-800-346-3243.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday. What's that going to be in East Midland? From staff reports. It appears a discount store will be coming to the 2200 block of North Fairgrounds Road. Around the intersection of Fairgrounds and Scarborough Drive will be a Dollar General. Construction has started on that store. According to an internet search, there are nearly 20 Dollar General stores already in and around Midland. Local briefs from staff reports. Midland man charged with assaulting pregnant woman. Adial Aliazar Varela, 22, was arrested on Monday and charged with assaulting a pregnant woman. The affidavit states that on Monday evening, Varela and the woman were in a verbal disagreement at a residence in West Midland. During the argument, Varela allegedly twisted the woman's arm and hit her in the collarbone area. Varela also allegedly threw a cup of toilet water in the woman's face and broke her phone when she attempted to call for help. The affidavit states the woman is 7 months pregnant. Varela has been charged with assault of a pregnant person and interference with an emergency request for assistance. He was released from the Midland County Detention Center on Tuesday. Pedestrian killed. A Jasper man is dead as he was struck Tuesday night by a vehicle on the Interstate 20 South Service Road. Midland police reported that 33-year-old Eric Font was walking eastbound on the south side of the street when he was struck by a 2017 Chevrolet Silverado. MPD officers responded to the area around 9:31 p.m. and located the Silverado. Police stated that the driver advised he had struck someone who was walking along the road. Font was pronounced deceased at the scene. Midland police stated the fatal accident took place in the 1300 block of East I-20. The investigation is ongoing.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, September 2nd. Frank Mark Kiefer of Frisco, Texas, passed away on August 22nd at the age of 76. He was born on November 14, 1944, at Bay Ridge Hospital in Brooklyn, New York, to Frank Robert Kiefer and Margaret Hutchison Kiefer, and two older sisters, March and Nancy. He met the love of his life, Aurelia Santola, and on August 16, 1970, they were married. Frank worked as a geologist for many companies, including J.M. Huber, Bass Enterprises, and TXO Production. In 1989, Frank began working for Arcadis, Garrity and Miller, and then finally for Lone Wolf Resources before retiring in 2009. While in Midland, Frank volunteered for the St. Vincent de Paul Society and worked in the food pantry at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Frank is survived by his wife of 51 years, Aurelia, son Christopher, daughter Katrina and husband Adam and children, Jackson and Chance, and his son Kurt and his wife Marianne and their children, Josephine and Creed. Frank was preceded to death by his son Craig Robert in 1989, his parents, and his two sisters. A memorial mass was held on Friday, August 27th at St. Gabriel the Archangel Catholic Church in McKinney, Texas. To convey condolences and to sign an online registry, please visit www.tjmfuneral.com. Imogene Ledbetter Evans, age 104, formerly of Stanton, Texas, passed away on August 31st in Abilene. The family will receive friends at the First Methodist Church of Stanton from 1 to 2 p.m. on Friday, September 3rd. Funeral services will follow at 2 p.m. at the church, with burial at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland afterwards. Imogene was born on June 2, 1917, to Ben Turner Hale and Irene Evelina Heckman Hale in Howard County near Cahoma, Texas. She was the youngest of their 11 children. Imogene's first husband was Alton Lee Ledbetter, and they had two children together. Alton passed away in 1978, and several years later she married Lonnie Leander Evans. Imogene is survived by her son, Ron, of Pasadena, Texas, son-in-law, Randy Robinette, of Blackwell, Texas, stepsons and daughters Dan and Barbara Evans of Arkansas, Robert Evans of Allen, Texas, Lonnie and Barbara Evans of Austin, Texas, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, both her husbands, six sisters, and four brothers. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Ira Ann Shirley Nadine McMahon, also known as Nene McMahon, passed away on August 28th. She was 54 years old. A graveside service will be held at the Sheffield Cemetery in Sheffield, Texas, at 10 a.m. on Friday, September 3rd. She grew up in Sheffield, Texas, alongside the Pecos River, being raised by her grandparents, Nani and Da, and attending school in Ira Ann, Texas, and graduating in 1985. She was preceded in death by her grandparents, Olin Smith, and his wife, Catherine, Nani, Herman Kennedy and wife Laura, her parents Floyd Kennedy, his wife Carolyn, and mother Olita Patterson, and uncle Lloyd Coots. She is survived by her husband Jeffrey McMahon, son Dustin McMahon and his wife Ashley, and daughter Scout, son Sean McMahon and his wife Kirsten, and daughters Tess and Reese. She is also survived by her brother, Olin Kennedy, and his wife, Kathleen, their children, Robert Kennedy, Shanna Tidwell, and husband, John, Colton Kennedy, Colleen Simpson, and husband, Mitchell, and several grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to the Ira Ann Ex-Students Association. Arrangements are under the care of Schaefer Nichols Funeral Home. Tamara Lachey Andrews was born December 14, 1983 in Midland to Craig Johnson Sr. and the late Josephine Johnson. She attended school at Midland High, where she graduated, and went on to attend cosmetology school at Midland College. Tamara was preceded in death by Billy and Ella Mae Andrews and Joe and Claudia Johnson. She was also preceded in death by her chicken lady, Josephine Johnson, her two aunts, Deborah Andrews, Barbara Posey, one uncle, Billy Galloway, and her two cousins, Billy Galloway and Dewan Andrews. She is survived by her companion, Jesse J.J. Johnson, her father, Craig C.J. Johnson Sr., her three brothers, Craig Johnson Jr., Wakan J.Q. Andrews, Shelley and Christopher Johnson, two sisters, Aisha Wooden and Kimberly White, her three nieces, Asia Andrews, Jayla Andrews, K.K. Johnson, and a nephew, Adavante Johnson, as well as a host of aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends. Visitation will be held Friday, September 3rd at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Family will be receiving friends from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Funeral service will be held Saturday, September 4th, at True Light Christian Fellowship, 3001 North A Street in Midland, starting at 11 a.m. Interment to follow at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Andrews Johnson family at this time. Juan Carlos Santos, age 48, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, August 31st. Viewing will be Thursday, September 2nd, from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, September 3rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his wife, Christy Santos, two sons, Ryan Santos and Orlando Santos, his mother, Maria de Jesus Alemán, three brothers, Marcos Santos, Omar Santos, and Edgar Santos, one sister, Alejandro Santos, and two grandchildren. Susan Reeves, age 67, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, August 31st. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, September 3rd, at First Baptist Chapel in Midland. Susan is survived by her husband, James Michael Mike Reeves, children, Rachel Boaz, Nathan Reeves, Hannah Hoffman, and Charlotte Boaz. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com.
Hi, I'm Kim, reading the Odessa American. Today is Thursday, September 2nd. Judge signs Spider Gonzalez's execution order, lethal injection to take place March 8, 2022. Michael Dean Spider Gonzalez sat quietly as his execution orders were read aloud and signed by Ector County Judge John Schrode at the 358th District Courtroom. Gonzalez's execution by lethal injection is scheduled for sometime after 6 p.m., March 2, 2022, at the Correctional Institutions Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice in Huntsville. The hearing took place Wednesday afternoon, which also happened to be Gonzalez's 48th birthday. The occupied gallery in the 358th District Courtroom listened silently to the execution orders. Gonzalez entered the courtroom quietly and left without saying anything to the gallery. The gallery was also asked by the courtroom bailiff to not say anything and make any hand gestures toward Gonzalez, who was wearing thick-rimmed glasses, his black hair still combed from front to back with a full beard that featured gray hairs poking through his mask. Gonzalez was sentenced to death for the April 22, 1994 stabbing deaths of Manuel and Merced Aguirre, and has been going through appeals since his initial 1995 conviction and the 2009 resentencing. The Aguirres were longtime neighbors of Gonzalez. According to court records, Gonzalez was convicted of the offense of capital murder on December 7, 1995. On December 8, 1995, the court sentenced Gonzalez to death in accordance with the findings of the jury. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals affirmed the conviction and the sentence and denied the defendant's initial state's habeas application. The defendant was retried on punishment in 2009. On May 2, 2009, the court again sentenced the defendant to death in accordance with the findings of the jury. The court records show the Court of Criminal Appeals affirmed the sentence and subsequently dismissed the defendant's state habeas application. Ground broken on Wood Health Sciences Building. In marking its 75th year anniversary Wednesday, Odessa College celebrated its history and its future, breaking ground on a new state-of-the-art health sciences building. Construction on the $40 million four-story, 83,000 square foot wood health sciences building will take place about 2 years, and the ceremony included college and community dignitaries. The ceremony and remarks were streamed live on Facebook. Lorraine Perryman, who served on OC's 2012 bond committee, asked for a moment of silence for the mass shooting in Odessa that occurred 2 years ago, the terror in Afghanistan, the fight against COVID-19, destruction caused by Hurricane Ida, and other items. "We have much to pray for our community and for our country and for the world," Perryman said. Perryman attended OC and said everyone who grew up in Odessa has been touched by the college in some way. She recognized the Wood family and Brenda Denton, executive director of the Wood Family Foundation, citing their many years of support. OC opened in September 1946 with 186 students and only 5 instructors. They met at night at Odessa High School, and look at what it has become, Perryman said. She added that there are now campuses in outlying towns. It has an enrollment of more than 7,000 students and offers more than 120 associate degrees and certificate programs. It also offers baccalaureate degrees in certain subject areas. OC has been a leader in building our workforce and building our community for the last 75 years with the support of the City of Odessa and the citizens of Ector County. I had the pleasure of being a part of OC 2015, which was planning for what the school would look like in 2018. That culminated in, as many of you recall, a bond election in 2012, which we passed with overwhelming odds. That's when I first met Tanya Wood. During that bond election, which she was chief of staff here in Odessa College, Perryman said, I co-chaired that bond election with Les Littlejohn, and it's wonderful to see all the construction that has been made possible in the transformation of this campus, because 69% of Odessans voted for Odessa College in 2012, she added. Vice President of Instruction Tremaine Anderson reviewed the history of OC by decades. Tim Edgman, president of the Odessa Development Corporation, said one of the most rewarding parts of being on the board is seeing projects come to fruition. With Wednesday's event, Edgman said Odessans got a chance to see what they're doing with their tax dollars. Medical Center Hospital has made a $5 million investment into the building. President and CEO Russell Tippin thanked OC President Gregory Williams for letting the hospital be involved in the project. On the first floor of this building will be a medical center simulation hospital. We're not going to recruit nurses there. We're going to make nurses there. I think we've all learned in today's world how important your health care is. We're going to create nurses here that will go directly into the workforce, and we're going to provide the best health care you can get in West Texas and definitely in Odessa, Texas. We are proud to be your partner, Tippin said. Williams said students will learn how to do the firsthand work when they attend classes at the Health Sciences building. He added that everyone is in this together, so it's better if everyone works together and doesn't worry about who gets the credit. On a separate note, Williams said OC has already passed its 7,000 student record set last fall, even though enrollment isn't yet complete and should make 8,000 this year. The goal is now 10,000 students. Cruz Castillo, president of JSA Architects, said the project has already started, although it has not come out of the ground yet. The groundbreaking lets the community and the rest of OC know it's coming. It's a very exciting time, and to be able to join that together with the 75th anniversary celebration, it was a no-brainer to pull this all together, Castillo said. Dr. Rohith Saravanan, Regional Chief of Staff at Odessa Regional Medical Center, said they were pleased to be part of the project. From a hospital standpoint, we are so excited to have a venue where our future nurses can be trained. We're proud to partner with Odessa College to be able to offer this level of education. not just from books, but from a building where you actually simulate what it's like to be in a hospital with patients. We look forward to partnering with them continuously to provide this education and the clinical opportunities at Odessa Regional Medical Center, Sarah Vannon said. He noted that one of the hospital's challenges currently is staffing. We're looking forward to growing our own because right now we're having to go outside looking for travelers from outside the area. But the future is us growing our own, so we're very much looking forward to this. Sarah Vannon added, Executive Director of Advancement, Jackie Gore, was a driving force behind the fundraising efforts of the Health Sciences Building. Today was a great day at Odessa College, Gore said. It was wonderful to see all our friends in the community and to honor our partners in the Wood Health Sciences Building. We also have a number of alumni and Odessa College retirees here on campus today. So it is just a wonderful day to see everyone and to celebrate the great things Odessa College has accomplished over the last 75 years. The groundbreaking was just one part of it. The day featured a breakfast, the groundbreaking, a pep rally to kick off the Drive to Success program, campus tours, recognition of past homecoming queens, and more. A concert featuring the Little River Band has been postponed. It's just been a lot of fun to see all of these past students who have so much pride in attending Odessa College, Gore said. There is a second phase in the Health Sciences Building and plans for the future. JSA Architects has put together a plan for our downtown presence. Dr. Williams is working with the mayor and the city council on what those plans would look like and what a lot of this new plan will be constructed on. I would think in the coming weeks there will be more details as the Odessa City Council has an opportunity to review those proposed plans and work with Dr. Williams and other Odessa College leaders on what those plans look like. Once approved, this downtown presence will happen pretty quickly, Gore said. Castillo presented proposed plans for downtown at the last OC Board of Trustees meeting. It will be a good amount of green space so that we can have an outdoor activities in that area, space for food trucks to come up for special events, and a staging area. Then down the road, a building where we can do more things with the community and with Odessa College students. It will be a very versatile space, and we're still planning it with the city council and others on how that space can be utilized, so more to come. Gore said they have started on phase two of the Health Sciences Building, which will help pay for the furnishings, equipment, technology, and any other construction expenses that pop up. We're setting that goal at $10 million, and we already have several pending agreements with hopes to close those out in the next few months, Gore said. Phase two will be implemented as we get closer to opening the building, and that gives us a couple of years to finish out the portion of the fundraising, so we will continue to talk about it. Bond Committee talks elementary middle school priorities. Middle and elementary schools are the focus of Tuesday night's Bond Committee meeting. Members at each table reported out what their takeaway was from the information they received on numbers of students, use, and conditions. Those attending noted the need for middle schools in different parts of town, and the consensus was that new buildings were preferred to renovating. There was a suggestion to turn Ector Middle School into a career and technical education center. Attendees said Carver Early Education Center should be replaced, as should Bonham Middle School, and the portables should be eliminated. Daryl Pearson, a partner with PBK, an architecture, engineering, planning, technology, and facility consulting firm, said the average campus age in Ector County ISD is 51 years old. Participants talked about whether new campuses were needed, major renovations, modernization, or replacement of an existing campus. Superintendent Scott Murray said last time a bond issue was considered, there were $700 million in needs. That was just to fix existing buildings, not build new ones. Those numbers have not been updated to 2021. That does not include any new school construction, Murray said. The opportunity as a community is to figure out how much the community will tolerate for a bond issue. The school district he came from had a 10-year bond cycle, Murray said. At Cypress Fairbanks, a fast-growing district, they had a 3-year bond cycle. We have growth in our community, he said. We also have significant needs. The needs of the school district will continue to grow over time, and if we are not taking bites out of this elephant over time, we will end up where we are today with a facility crisis. At a previous district he worked at, Mary said, they used facility age for replacement. As a community, we have an opportunity to think about those options and what is right for children in Ector County, Mary said. Asked what a good size for an elementary campus is, Mary said 500 is a good size, but it could go up to 600 or 700 to be fine. Some communities build larger schools because that's what their community wants. In ECISD today, Mary said middle schools are at about the $1,000 student mark or more. Nimitz Middle School has more than 1,400 students. High schools run the gamut from 400 at the early college high school to about 4,000 at Odessa and Permian high schools. Other information. Acreage needed for elementary, 10 to 15 acres, 25 to 30 acres for middle school, and 60 plus for high schools. The district's projected enrollment is 32,730. Numbers fluctuate daily, and they could be more accurate after Labor Day. An elementary school for 850 to 900 students cost $30 to $35 million to build. A middle school for 1,200 students costs $55 to $60 million, and a high school for 2,500 students costs $145 to $150 million. Campuses that have the highest number of portable classrooms are the Alternative Center with 24, Crockett with 12, and Permian High School with 13. Redistricting could solve some of the overcrowding issues at a select few campuses, but only temporarily, district information said. How will building new schools help improvement required schools' academics? According to district information, access to modern facilities and equipment is one component in providing a world-class education to the children of ECISD that leads to high academic performance. Other facilities were designed to support the form of instruction that was appropriate for the period. Narrow hallways, small classrooms, and straight rows of desks address the needs of an educational environment that provided students for a workforce geared toward factories and assembly lines. The job market of the 21st century has transformed significantly and requires a new set of skills and abilities to be successful. Modern facilities can foster critical thinking, problem-solving, creativity, and collaboration. The tools and resources students and teachers use have also evolved. Technology is a critical component of the modern learning environment, and older facilities are typically not equipped with the infrastructure needed to support high-tech learning environments. When partnered with a great teacher and engaging curriculum, a modern facility designed around the needs of children does not hinder, but rather fosters a healthy learning environment, resulting in improved academic performance. Some of the major renovations on campus that aren't reflected in the data are architectural, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and fire life safety capabilities. Currently, the district is conducting a review of all of its choice or magnet schools. District information details it wants to expand the number of high-quality options available to all children, including elementary students, by expanding or replicating highly sought-after choice programs while redesigning a less desirable choice school to increase the number of students seeking enrollment. The formal assessment of choice school programming is scheduled for completion in January 2022, which will allow time for community input, site visits, and thorough results based on quantitative analysis. The information states, currently there is only one middle school choice program, Ector College Prep. Our initial analysis of choice programming immediately identified a lack of middle school options as a significant deficiency. It is our hope that we will be able to add additional middle school choices in the not-too-distant future, the information said, but first they must complete the review process. The information that we gleaned from that work will inform the decisions that we make surrounding middle school choice expansion over the next several years. One option that we have already begun researching is the potential of adding an international baccalaureate IB middle school program to feed the high school. IB program at Odessa High. We hope to find other strong options to add in the coming years as well, the information stated. Quick hits. Permian Basin Fair and Expo. The Permian Basin Fair and Expo is making its return to Odessa from Friday through September 12th at the Ector County Coliseum. Fair hours are 5 p.m. to midnight, September 3rd and 10th, noon to midnight, September 4th, 11th, and 12th, and noon to 10 p.m. September 5th through the 9th. The annual event will be celebrating its 45th year after being canceled in 2020 due to outbreak of COVID-19. The yearly fair features a variety of activities, including live entertainment, talent shows, pageants, a petting zoo, carnival, and other various livestock and Western sporting events. Visit pbfair.com. Marfa Lights Festival. The Marfa Chamber of Commerce will present the 34th annual Marfa Lights Festival Friday and Saturday in Marfa. Marfa Lights will kick off at 1 p.m. Friday with food and business vendors around the historic Presidio County Courthouse, Marfa. Live music will begin in the evening with and include a set by DJ Ruben Huardo of El Paso and a live performance by Sana from Presidio. Festivities will begin at 10 a.m. with a parade through downtown Marfa led by Grand Marshal Genevieve Bassam. Live music and DJ sets will continue throughout Saturday, culminating in a performance by headliner La Fibre of Pasadena. This event is free, entirely outdoors, and open to the public. The Marfa Chamber of Commerce is currently accepting applications for vendors and parade participants, as well as seeking business sponsorships. For more information, please visit marfachamberofcommerce.org or email marfachamberofcommerce@gmail.com. Heartwalk. Permian Basin area Heartwalk participants and teams are invited to celebrate heart and stroke survivors, raise life-saving funds, and encourage physical activity on September 19th at the MCH Center for Health and Wellness, 8050 Highway 191. Registration is at 8 a.m. and the walk starts at 9 a.m. This year's walk is led by John Mick of Condor Pipeline. The funds raised from the Permian Basin Heart Walk go toward research advocacy and to promote better health in support of the association's 2024 Health Equity Impact Goal, reducing barriers to health care access and quality. To learn more, visit www.2.heart.org. To register and give, visit permianbasinheartwalk.org. Free business workshops. Shell Oil Company, in collaboration with Lift Fund, will offer a series of free September online and in-person business seminars to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing small business owners in the Permian Basin with the technical, business, and soft skills needed to succeed. Classes will be offered in English and Spanish September 11th, 18th, and 21st. Classes will be taught on Zoom and at various locations in Odessa, Pecos, and Monahans. To learn more about participating in the Shell LiveWire Permian Basin Pilot Program, visit www.shell.us/LiveWire. Shell LiveWire is the flagship enterprise development program of Shell. The program strengthens local economies across the globe by promoting entrepreneurship and developing entrepreneurs, according to a program news release. Lift Fund is a San Antonio-based nonprofit community small business lender that provides capital, financial coaching, tools, and resources to entrepreneurs who do not have access to loans from commercial sources. Since inception, Lift Fund has provided over $392 million in capital, propelling the dreams of more than 24,000 diverse small businesses in 14 states. Odessa man dies in two-vehicle collision. A 38-year-old man died in a two-vehicle collision in southwest Odessa. The reported fatal collision happened at 6:55 p.m. August 29th on State Loop 338, mile marker 254, about 2 miles southwest of Odessa, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release stated. Maria Rodriguez Sain, 31, of Odessa, was reportedly driving a 2015 Ford F-150, while Hector R. Talamantes, 38, of Odessa, was driving a 2007 Chevrolet Suburban. Investigations showed the F-150 was traveling north on State Loop 338 while the Suburban was traveling south on State Loop 338. The press release detailed, the F-150 failed to drive in a single lane and collided with the Suburban. Talamantes was pronounced dead by Odessa Fire Rescue at the scene, while Rodriguez Saina was transported to Medical Center Hospital with incapacitating injuries. Neither driver was wearing their seatbelt. The collision is still under investigation. Police searching for suspect involved in officer-involved shooting. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a second suspect involved in an officer-involved shooting on Monday. According to the OPD Facebook post, a 16-year-old boy was arrested in connection to the shooting, and he has been charged with aggravated assault against a public servant, a first-degree felony. Ector County Youth Center Director Kevin Mann said on Wednesday morning that a 16-year-old boy was at the facility, and his detention hearing is scheduled for Wednesday afternoon. Mann told the Odessa American the 16-year-old boy was ordered detained and his next detention hearing will be in 10 working days. OPD reportedly responded to the area of 3rd Street and North County Road West around 10:30 p.m. Monday to assist Ector County Sheriff's Officer deputies. A robbery turned into a pursuit. During a pursuit, shots were fired at officers and OPD unit was struck. The Facebook post detailed, no one was hurt. The 16-year-old boy was arrested and charged while the second suspect is still on the run. Rather than issuing press releases via email to media outlets, the Odessa Police Department has chosen to put information on the OPD app and on its Facebook page. However, the OPD app isn't updated regularly. There have been a total of 5 updates over the last week on its OPD app. The investigation continues.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, August 29th. Letters to the Editor. Open letter to Texas Governor Joseph Uecker, Odessa writes, Dear Governor Abbott, I am very surprised, saddened, and disappointed that you have become pro-choice. I always thought that you were pro-life, but it looks like I am wrong. When you issued your order against mask mandates, that told me that you had switched sides and had become totally pro-choice. But at least I must congratulate you on being consistent. You obviously believe that it's okay for a person to choose to expose him or herself and to expose others as well to serious illness and death. So I presume that you also believe that it is okay for a woman to use her freedom to end the life of her unborn child. But is consistency worth a human life? Hearts are hurting for Americans. Gloria A. Apollinario, Odessa, writes, America is hurting. Each one of us, regardless of ideologies, are hurting. The deaths of our Marines are something each of us are feeling. It hurts. This morning at my 7 a.m. Bible study, where I normally sit and listen, I spoke up with words and wisdom that seemed to emanate somewhere from my spirit and my being. I stated that everything that is happening right now has God's hands on it. I said that God is correcting what was wrong. Some of us felt that the election was illegitimate. We knew something was amiss, but we could not put our arms around it. But God knew. Nothing has been right since the onset of this administration. One chaos after another. Poor leadership, poor decisions, the country suffers. I believe that what is happening and what has happened in Afghanistan is God's way of showing us that He is making the changes. Treasures gained by wickedness do not profit. Proverbs 10:2. That this leadership was not sanctioned, that we need a change. We might have to suffer through the process of this change, but we must hold on and trust Him and follow through with the changes come 2022 and 2024. I believe that He is also showing us that America does not have the right to invade and occupy other countries for whatever purposes. He showed us that in Korea, Vietnam, and Afghanistan. We can help other countries by diplomacy, peacekeeping, organized giving in terms of food, shelter, health, education, and religious ministries, that we must protect America within our borders. I realize that this is not easy to execute, but we must try. We have enough sophisticated firepower militarily to defend us. I believe that we must be our brother's keepers. We are one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May God bless America. Biden is a terrible president, Sandy Milner, Odessa, writes. Our pseudo-president, Joe Biden, has a pretty impressive list of accomplishments. In only 7.5 months, he has increased the mass invasion on our southern by a factor of about 10, and about 60% of those have COVID, so he has achieved new levels of an infectious disease. Next, in only 7.5 months, he has caused a massive rise in the inflation rate, it having gone from 1.76% in 2020 to 4.76% now. Gasoline has gone from $1.79 a gallon just last year to nearly $3 a gallon now, and even higher in some locations. Biden has appointed idiots to cabinet positions like we haven't seen since Obama's term. We've got the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who is more concerned with ensuring that our military is woke and thoroughly learned in diversity than he is with them being militarily prepared for war. His press secretary, Psaki, has the amazing ability to concoct an outrageous prevarication on an instant's notice, like when a reporter asks her a question, which of course is all she can do since she is brain dead. Next, he picked Harris as his pseudo-vice president when her only qualifications are her race and sex, the latter of which is the way she got her start in politics. She has done nothing in any job Biden gave her, such as the border. She can't answer a question without cackling, like a hen who just laid an egg. And it seems that her grandparents were major slave owners in Jamaica, which should have aroused the instant rage of all BLM idiots and other liberals. But, of course, since she was a Democrat, she gets a pass. And, finally, she's added one more score to our record of wars won and lost. The count is 3 wins and now 3 losses. We won the American Revolution, World War I, and World War II. We lost Vietnam, Iraq, and now Afghanistan. Not to even mention the absurd and disgraceful way he pulled our troops out of Afghanistan. We didn't win in Korea, we merely achieved a truce. We haven't won a war since World War II, which ended in 1945, so we have a stretch of 76 years of losses.
Xarelto and colonoscopy. Dear Dr. Roach, my doctor wants me to have a colonoscopy, but I would have to be off Xarelto for 5 days. That last time I did this, I had a small stroke. PD. Answer. Xarelto is an anticoagulant used in people who are at high risk for developing a blood clot. This may include a previous history of blood clot in the leg or lungs, atrial fibrillation, mechanical heart valve, or other reasons. For people with a high risk of complications, if an anticoagulant is stopped, most experts recommend performing a screening colonoscopy without stopping the anticoagulation. However, if the colonoscopy is being performed to remove a large polyp, for example, then there is a significant risk of bleeding. If the anticoagulant isn't stopped, in these cases, the risk of bleeding must be weighed against the risk of a clot, which can cause a stroke. I am surprised at the length of time you mentioned. 5 days is usually not necessary with Xarelto and similar medications. The most recent paper I read suggested that restarting the next day is generally safe for most people after polyp removal. Ask the gastroenterologist performing your colonoscopy to talk with the doctor prescribing the Xarelto so they can consider all the risks and recommend the best course.
Here is the Dear Abby column as it appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, September 2nd. Boyfriend sets Do Not Disturb policy for visit to ex. Dear Abby, I've been dating a great guy for a year and a half. For 8 years before we met, he dated a woman with teenage daughters. He never had children, so they are as close to his own kids as he will ever have. He was recently invited to the graduation party of one of the daughters. It will be a week-long trip since they have moved across the country. He intends to stay a while and visit with the girls and his old girlfriend. I'm grudgingly okay with that. The part I'm having real trouble with is that he told me he won't call or text me the entire week that he is gone. He has apologized in advance, but says he wants to concentrate on the girls and have a break from everything. We usually talk every day, and this seems extreme, especially since he will be spending a week with the woman who broke up with him and left him heartbroken, his words. He realizes his behavior isn't normal and assures me we are okay, but I'm so hurt. Am I right to be this upset? And how do I get past this? Signed, Silent Treatment in Illinois. Dear Silent Treatment, I understand why you would find it upsetting that your boyfriend of a year and a half has unilaterally decided to go radio silent under these circumstances. It is a radical change of his behavior pattern, and I'm sure most women would be at least taken aback. Before he leaves, request that he send you a text confirming that he has arrived safely, and another telling you when he has started back and expects to be home. The way to get past this is to stay very busy in his absence. Make plans with friends during the evenings so that you won't be sitting alone at home stewing. And when he returns, do not give him the third degree. Dear Abby, I am a 41-year-old mother of three, married less than 2 years. I now realize what a selfish lover my husband is. He expects things from me and refuses to reciprocate, which leaves me unhappy and unsatisfied. When I ask him to change things up or return the same foreplay, it results in us not connecting at all. How do I get him to be less selfish without hurting his feelings? I'm on the verge of cheating. Signed, It's Stale in the Midwest. Dear It's Stale, cheating won't help your situation. It will likely make it worse. Instead of dealing with a selfish or sexually repressed husband, you will have, in addition, one who is outraged when he discovers your infidelity. Find a time when you are both calm to talk to him. Tell him you love him, but your sex life is unsatisfactory, and if he loves you, he will agree to talk things out with a licensed marriage and family therapist. If he refuses or things don't improve, you may want to consult a lawyer.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.